Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and happy new year to you and yours. And let's get this first Friday of 2019 started off with the first Duff McKagan joke of the week of the year.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan. You know, my wife was going into labor. I called the doctor. I said, doctor, my wife's going into labor. Her contractions are coming really, really fast. What should I do? The doctor said, is this her first child? I said, no, this is her husband. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
That's a good one. Duff is, I think he got some joke books for Christmas because his stuff is pretty good. Thanks to Duff McKagan to start the joke of the week for 2019. I laughed. I cried. Duff just played covers on New Year's in a cover band. They're called Cover Up with dudes from Green Day. Once again, Duff also working on a solo record based on his recent tour with Guns N' Roses. Duff is a great guy. We're going to have to get him back on to Talk is Jericho when the time is right. Thanks to Duff, and thanks to Reed Tucker for returning to Talk is Jericho to talk comic books. Reed came on to talk about the Marvel versus DC battle, which he also wrote about in his book Slugfest, the epic 50-year battle between Marvel and DC. Great read and a great podcast. You should pick up that book and go listen to the show we did last year talking about the epic war between the two comic book brands. And today, this week, Reed is back to talk about some of the writers and artists who helped create some of the biggest superheroes in comic book history, but who died completely unknown and broke. I'm talking about people like Steve Ditko, who really contributed a lot to the development of Stan Lee's Spider-Man. It wasn't just Stan Lee. Steve was involved. Steve never got any credit or cash. How about Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, who created Superman and died broke? And even Batman. I bet you don't know the name Bill Finger. Well, you will after this show. All of these stories are so hard to believe, but totally true. And Reed's also talking about the state of comic books today and has some great ideas as to how DC can up their game to compete with Marvel when it comes to making movies. We know Wonder Woman and Aquaman are great movies. DC needs to continue in that vibe. So here we are talking comics with Reed Tucker right now on Talk is Jericho.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes a Spider-Man.
All right, so I guess, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, 8 months ago, last year, I had Reed Tucker on the show, which is funny because there's some social media that have you listed as Tucker Reed, and I was like, I think his name is Reed Tucker.
So. There is a guy named Tucker Reed who's like the some sort of government official in Brooklyn. I get a lot of his emails.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so okay. He gets a lot of my emails. So I get stuff about like trash pickup in Gravesend, and he gets stuff about like Superman. So
shout out to Tucker Reed if you're listening, which I'm sure you aren't. Yeah. But it was you had written a book about the Marvel versus DC War Slugfest, yeah. Is what it was called. And it was one of my top rated shows of the year. And you just mentioned it did a lot for you as well.
It did, yeah, which is what we were just talking about this off the air. But there seems to be a lot of crossover between wrestling fans and comic book fans. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going on there? Why do you think people like those two things?
I always say that like wrestling fans, KISS fans, comic book fans, Star Wars fans, intertwined in a lot of ways. Because I think, you know, wrestling is basically like in a lot of ways a comic book come to life.
Yeah,
you know, it's like a live action comic book sort of thing. And there's a lot of guys like Hurricane Helms and CM Punk and like tons of guys that have written comic books. And they're just very much into that culture. And I think there's a lot of fans that feel the same way. And obviously, like I said, just going by my numbers, your show is the highest rated non-wrestling show that I've had in 2018.
That's crazy.
And you mentioned that tell me what you just said about for exposure for your book.
Yeah, you know, so my book came out last October, and you know, I work in journalism. I have a lot of contacts in journalism. It got a lot of pickup in the press of, you know, it was in the New York Times, it was in Newsweek, it was in AP, it was all these places. And that didn't seem, I mean, it did some, but it didn't seem to do that much. But when I was on your show, for whatever reason, it just totally blew up. So I had all these people contact me, a bunch of movie producers contact
really?
Me. Really? Yeah. I'd had a couple email me, but like after that show came out, it was like, hey, I heard you on Chris Jericho's podcast.
No kidding.
Are the rights available? So from that, you know, we started to...
You're kidding me. Yeah. So there's a chance that there's some... You know, you don't have to give away any secrets, but you were contacted for a movie deal.
Yeah, so it's in the works, maybe.
That's amazing.
So we'll see what happens.
So
yeah.
A movie deal based on Marvel versus DC and some of these like covert operations that happened?
Kind of, yeah. Like a documentary series more than a feature film.
Oh.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see. I mean, the deal is still being done, but yeah, so I have you to thank for that. So
well,
I appreciate it.
And once again, you know, I'm not stupid. I had some extra time today. I'm like, I got to get Reed on the show again.
Oh, nice.
And what we're going to do is last time we talked about Marvel versus DC. And if you guys haven't heard the show or read Reed's book and you're into comics, you got to go read it because it's very interesting to see kind of how all of these, like we said, like kind of one-upping each other, one's upsmanship. I thought it was very interesting what we spoke about Stan Lee, about he is now the face of Marvel Comics, but there was other guys involved who were kind of in that realm, in that world. Yeah. And what you brought up, because I said, let's just talk about comics and then some of the history, was the recent passing of Steve Ditko.
Yeah.
Who was one of my favorite artists because he drew the original Spider-Man.
Yeah, so you liked him, huh?
Yeah, remember when I told you that I had Amazing Spider-Man 13 or 18?
That's right.
Penciled by Steve Ditko.
Right. Well, some people didn't like his art because it was so kind of out there. It was very oddball. It wasn't very smooth. I don't know. Were you attracted to kind of the outsider?
How do you mean? Like...
Well, you know, his characters weren't very attractive, you know, the
kind of weird looking.
It was very it was kind of off-putting for some people, but I think that's what people liked about
it. Spider-Man had really big white eyes.
Yeah, exactly. So he was perfect for Spider-Man because, you know, Peter Parker's a gawky teenager and Spider-Man's kind of a you know, he put him in a lot of interesting poses, the character. And then John Romita came along after Ditko left and the characters became much prettier. You know, Mary Jane, his girlfriend, became beautiful. Peter Parker looked like a kind of a built athlete. And so some people were put off by that change.
But the original point of Peter Parker was he was just a gawky teenager.
Exactly. That's what I thought too. And so that's what Ditko really captured, that what people liked. And it's funny, if people don't know, Ditko... He died, you know, at the end of June. So,
and how old was he?
He was probably 90, I think.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's really weird. And, you know, we're recording this in Midtown Manhattan, and he had a studio probably four blocks from here.
Really?
Where he just continued to work. And it was in just a nondescript building off Broadway, just north of Times Square. And you could take the elevator up, and there was just a wooden door, and it had a panel on it that said S. Ditko. So he was just behind that door. And he worked there kind of anonymously for years.
What years was he doing Spider-Man?
So he did it until 66. So 62 to 66. Okay. And then, you know, he'd been a freelance artist for Marvel. Stan Lee wanted him to come back and draw Spider-Man. He did it. And he famously had a falling out with Stan Lee.
Over?
No one's sure. This is the mystery of Steve Ditko. He will never talk about it. He's a real... maybe recluse is too strong, but he's a real kind of antisocial guy. And so it was either Stan Lee didn't communicate with him, he didn't like the story Stan Lee was writing, or he thought he was owed more money from Spider-Man's success. Mm-hmm. Those are the speculations. But all of a sudden, he turned in his last issue of Spider-Man, and then he quit and apparently never spoke to Stan Lee again.
Really?
Yeah. And
never worked for Marvel again.
He did. He did come back. He was a weird guy. He was into this whole Ayn Rand objectivism thing, which he got into in the 60s. And so he had a real black or white view of the world.
I think Neil Peart wrote a lot of lyrics for Rush based on Ayn Rand theories. Like Anthem is one I know for sure.
Oh, man.
I think 2112 might even be based on an Ayn Rand novel at some point. So once again, a little bit of geekdom there.
Does that make it better or worse for you?
Anything to do with Rush makes it better.
Yeah, okay. With the Ayn Rand stuff.
So he was in the philosophy of Ayn Rand?
Yeah, he got into that. And so he had a real black and white view of the world. And if you crossed him in the smallest way, he would cut you out of his life. And so he kind of stopped doing superhero comics for a while and started towards the end of his life. He was in that studio, you know, four blocks away, and he was drawing these very strange self-published pamphlets all about, almost like editorial cartoons about objectivism philosophy.
Even in his 80s?
Even in his 80s. And so he had just had a Kickstarter, apparently, a couple weeks before he died. He was just in there working all the time. And he would put out these comics that had no distribution. You had to get a mail order from his editor. He didn't care about money. That was one of the things I think is the most un-American thing. The least 2018 thing I can think of was he was the co-creator of Spider-Man.
And he co-created Spider-Man. With Stan Lee.
Yeah. And if you ask some people, he did almost all of Spider-Man.
One thing which goes back into what we were saying, this is not an anti-Stan Lee podcast, but what you said before was that Stan is given credit for creating all of these characters.
Right.
But usually there was a co-creator with him that might have done the majority of the work.
Yeah, so there's real dispute over what happened because it was so long ago and everyone has a different version of the story. Stan Lee contends he had the idea for a character called Spider-Man. It was going to be a teenage boy. He would have the powers of Spider. Steve Ditko contends that's all Stan Lee had. He gave him the idea. Steve Ditko came up with the costume, came up with Peter Parker. What does his life look like? What does that first story look like? So all the elements that we consider the fleshing out of Spider-Man are probably due to Steve Ditko. Mm. So there's that whole argument of like, who is the creator of something? Like, I don't know what you would think. Sure. Like,
I mean, it's similar to, you know, Lennon and McCartney wrote every Beatles song.
Totally.
And now we know that obviously Yesterday, for example, was all Paul.
Right.
And he wanted to change it from Lennon McCartney to McCartney Lennon. And that caused a big issue because it's Lennon McCartney, but he didn't do anything on it.
Exactly.
But still, that's the way people see it and perceive it. So Stan Lee created Spider-Man. Well, who's this Steve Ditko trying to take credit for it?
Right. I think most people don't even, you know, who like Spider-Man or who have seen the movies don't even know who Steve Ditko was, because Stan Lee is so personable. He's the face of Marvel. Steve Ditko apparently did a comic convention back in the mid-60s. That was the one comic convention he ever went to. He never did another one, and I think his last interview was in 1968.
Wow.
Since then, he's never spoken publicly. He's never appeared publicly.
And never drew anything for any big... He didn't jump to DC or anything like that.
He did. That's the thing I don't understand is... Marvel burned him so badly in his own eyes, and yet in the 80s or 90s, he went back and he did a few jobs for them. He created this character called Speedball, co-created. He did this character called Squirrel Girl, which is so weird.
Which then DC created Squirrel Boy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of the greatest stories from last time you said that DC had Wonder Boy.
Totally.
So Marvel created Wonder Girl.
Rip off each other back and forth. Yeah, he just did weird things. Like, I think in the 80s, somebody hired him to draw a Transformers coloring book.
I don't know. I still recall that.
Did you have that growing
up? I'm not sure, but I remember like such a random, like, what?
Yeah, exactly. So, he did some jobs, but I think his real passion was doing these objectivism comics that nobody was reading. I don't think he cared. A few years ago, I wrote a newspaper story about him, so I knocked on his door over
just
there in the studio, just unannounced. Because the doorman was like, yeah, sure, going up. So I knocked on his door. He actually answered, and he was, he was an older guy. He was probably in his 80s. He had, a white undershirt on. It had ink stains on the front. He had plastic gloves on that had ink all over him. He was holding a brush, and he had maybe jeans on, and he just looked like...
What did he look like? What did he have, hair, no hair? What
kind of
face,
he was
tall,
bald.
Skinny?
He had, like, wisps of gray hair on the top of his head. He had really thick glasses, kind of horn-rim glasses, and he was... very polite, but very firm that he did not want to talk. And he's tired of answering questions about Spider-Man because for him, it was in the past. But I don't know. I can't think of another person in American life who would shun money and publicity in the way that he did.
Especially as the co-creator of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And this is something that we're going to talk about right now in this show, is how a lot of these guys who created these big name characters basically died destitute or with nothing.
Right.
And you're telling that Steve Ditko, when he passed away, had a sign on his door that said S. Ditko, but in an apartment or whatever, he should be living in a palatial estate for all the money that he'd be making from that, from Spider-Man.
Exactly. Just one of those movies from Spider-Man probably made, near $1 billion,
sure,
maybe. So I don't know what... I asked him, did he ever get any money from Spider-Man? And that was one of the things that he said, no. That was one of the questions he did answer when I knocked on his door, and he said he didn't. My guess is he did. Marvel was sending him checks for the stuff that they reprinted, the Spider-Man comics. But I don't know if he got any money.
Well, that could also explain the fallout between him and Stan Lee.
Yeah, that could. I really don't know. Other people have sued Marvel to try to reclaim some of the rights from their characters, and Marvel has paid them to go away. He easily could have done that and probably gotten a few million dollars to settle if he had gone
away.
Who
else had sued, do you know?
Well, yeah, Jack Kirby, who we talked about last time. He created basically like the X-Men, the Avengers.
Wow.
Pretty much almost everything having to do with Marvel in the 1960s, a Fantastic Four. He was probably their biggest creative mind. Next to Stan Lee.
So what was it that made Stan Lee become the face of Marvel Comics? Was it Stan himself, or was it somebody just going, hey, it's you?
Yeah, at one point he was their only employee, so I guess they had no choice. Yeah. But, he was very, he had a very kind of engaging personality. He was very charming. He was very good in public. He did a lot of talks on the college circuit.
Right.
You know, he was always on TV. But I also think, this is my own personal opinion, I don't know this, but he toiled in anonymity for a very long time. You know, he went to work at Marvel in I think, 1939. And so he wrote hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stories for these comic books, which were considered trash. And so in the 60s, you know, he was middle-aged. He had had no success in his life. And so he was finally gaining some success. Comic books were becoming respected. He was getting written up in newspapers. You know, he was being asked to speak at colleges. He was on TV. And so I think that really kind of fueled him in a way. And so that's my own personal gotcha. View. I don't know if that's true or not, but
well, it makes sense. So what other, you know, famed comic book creators ended up kind of in this same situation?
Yeah, I mean, the most famous are the creators of Superman. I don't know if you know their story.
I don't.
But,
do tell, Reed.
Yeah, exactly. So these were guys, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, who were teenagers when they created Superman back in the 1930s. They had done strips for their high school newspaper. You know, they were just two nerds who were into comic books, and they created this character, Superman. They shopped it around. No one was interested until finally National Comics, soon to be DC Comics, picked it up and published it as part of an anthology.
So just as a quick segue, yeah. So if you and I created a comic book character in the 30s, are we sending it away to different publishers and comic book companies going, hey, here's an idea. You want to buy it?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Exactly. And but this is the big area of dispute, because the comic books were booming. They need a lot of material. And so they did take on freelancers or people who just walked through their door because they were in desperate need of material. So Superman had actually been rejected by a newspaper syndicate. That's what they were trying to get, because that was the most lucrative
gig. Like comic strips.
Yeah, comic strips. So the first issue of Superman was actually drawn as a comic strip, and they had to recut it to publish it in the comic book
And here's
form.
A little lesson, kids, for those of you that don't know. When I was a kid, I'm not sure how old you are, Reed, but I'm sure you're the same generation. You would wait till Saturday where I had to do this because I was a paper boy. And Saturday was always a huge addition that you would put the comics insert into the paper. So your dad would get the paper, sports, entertainment. Can I have the comics, dad?
Yeah.
And he would pull out this, I don't know, 16 page insert that had all the comics that you could read, but only every Saturday.
Right.
So is that kind of what you're referring to?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, but you know, those were really apparently well paid because they were syndicated, and they, you know, as you said, they came out all the time,
weekly, daily. Whatever.
Yeah, and that was the dream, I think, for most comic book artists, is to get something like that, like Prince Valiant or whatever. I don't know what you read growing up, but
It was Prince Valiant. Even as you get a little bit more of the Family Circus, Far Side. Remember how huge the Far Side was?
Yeah.
What's the name of the guy who makes the sandwich?
Blondie.
His name, I can't remember the guy's name, is Denzel or Delton or Denton or Dagwood.
Dagwood. Yeah. Good.
Dagwood sandwich. Yeah. So I remember as a kid in the 70s and 80s reading Blondie, which probably came from the 20s or 30s, but it still was like, once you got hooked up in that world, you would go forever. Charles Schulz and Charlie Brown, Peanuts. That was going for 50 years.
Still going, and he's dead.
Right.
So that tells you right there. Right. So that was their dream, but they ended up selling it to DC back then, and they got $130 for it.
For all rights to the character.
Yes, and this is where it's disputed, because a lot of the problems that come in is that the publishing company claims that any work done for them is done work for hire and that they own it. Whereas some of the artists and writers say, you know, that's not fair. You know, I had this character.
Yeah.
And so they weren't, you know, they were either incredibly in need of money, you know, as people during the Great Depression were. And so they were willing to sell it for whatever. Or they also weren't very smart about contracts or legal issues.
Well, let me just once again. So you're talking about, let's say, the Beatles.
Yeah.
They sold all their publishing to Dick James Publishing. When they're 18, 19, you need to have a publishing firm. 90% for Dick James, 10% for the guys.
Right.
You know, Lemmy, when the famous Aussie record, No More Tears, he wrote a song called Mama, I'm Coming Home, all the lyrics.
Oh, yeah.
Sold it to Aussie for $40,000. It goes on to sell 3 million records. And in Lemmy's words to me, he's like, I thought it was a good idea at the time. I was wrong. But you're selling it because you don't know how big it's going to get. And these guys, for $130 in 1932, it probably gave them food for a month.
Exactly. And also, you're exactly right, where they had no idea that this was going to be anything, because nobody expected that these characters would last forever and they would become very lucrative. And so they sold the rights for $130. they were hired by DC on a 10-year contract. So they were producing Superman, you know, in the comics. They actually did get a comic strip. There was a radio show. But DC was making hand over fist money. So they were merchandising Superman. And they, you know, like I said, they had those TV shows and radio shows. So they were making millions of dollars. But I think...
sheets. Pajamas, whatever, yeah, everything Superman,
stuff, toys,
toothbrush, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and so apparently in the early days, they were making decent money. So they, I saw a lawsuit that said that they probably made $500,000 in the first 10 years, which back then was probably a lot of money. But when their 10-year contract came up, they sued to try to reclaim the rights for Superman or to say that they had, you know, they were owed more money because this character had then become, you know, just this worldwide hit that they never expected. And they felt, I think rightly so, left out of all the profits. And so they sued DC and they lost. And so after that, they were fired off Superman. And from there, their lives kind of took a tumble. They had a real difficulty finding work. Yeah, so nobody would hire
a comic
them.
Book artist and or whatever. I'm sure one was the artist, one was the
one was the artist, one was the writer, and so
not a lot of work in the comic book biz,
right? And so they were kind of blackballed because of their lawsuit, and so they got so desperate that a few years later, Jerry Siegel, who was the writer, his wife wrote to DC Comics and said, you know, please help this guy. You know, we don't have enough money. We're going to get evicted from our apartment. We can't afford diapers. All these ridiculous things, and so. He was rehired. This was in probably 1959, I think. So he worked for on Superman for a few more years until he was then fired again. And so then they've tried to sue a few more times over the years. They always lost because the courts held that they signed away the rights. And
that's so ridiculous. Yeah. You know? Like you hear about things like that nowadays where they will kind of give you retro rights and stuff.
Yeah.
You're signing under duress.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. And, you know, they were basically high school kids who didn't know what they were doing. But
when I first went to wrestling school, the very first day, they gave me a contract at the Hart Brothers school. And you had to sign the contract that said if you, money that you make in the wrestling business for the next 5 years, you have to pay Hart Brothers 10%.
Okay.
And I remember it, but it said Hart Brothers Pro Wrestling, but it was Hart Brothers Pro Testing. They put a T instead of the S. So Hart Brothers Pro Testing. But it's called signing under duress. I remember asking my family lawyer, like, do I owe these guys? Like, no, like, you don't show up for the first day of wrestling school and say, for the next 5 years, 10%, like, or else you can't train here. So it's the same thing with these guys. They're signing it under duress out of high school.
Right.
And the fact that the courts held that up, I mean, you're talking about the 50s and 60s. I bet you guarantee that would not fly in this day and age.
Maybe not. Yeah, I don't know. But, they really fell on hard times. There's a famous story about Joe Shuster, who was the artist, and he was also slowly going blind. So his avenues for work were really decreasing. And he, at one point, I think in the 50s or 60s, was working as a messenger in New York. Wow. So he was carrying packages around, and one day he actually had to deliver something to DC Comics, a message. So he brought a package up there, and a lot of people who were still there from the old days recognized him. So he was just, you know, he had really fallen on hard times. A few years later, he was arrested for sleeping on a park bench in Central Park. And so the cop felt so bad for him that he went and bought him dinner, apparently.
This is the creator of Superman.
Creator of Superman.
Possibly the most famous superhero of all time.
Yeah, and he had no money. He was living in an apartment apparently in Queens with his brother, and their descriptions of the apartment, it was like a one-bedroom apartment for the two of them. He was sleeping on this couch where the springs were coming out of the couch. He was nearly blind. He had no money. He had no prospects. Meanwhile, the writer, Jerry Siegel, he eventually fell out of the comic business and he moved out to the West Coast, and he was working as a government clerk in an office for $7,000 a year. So
was this ever rectified for these two guys?
It was, in a way. So before the movie came out, when word came that the original Christopher Reeve,
1978.
Yeah, so I think it was around 1974 or 1975. When the word that they were making that movie came out, Jerry Siegel, the writer of Superman, took out a full-page ad in the New York Times that and some other newspapers that just said, you know, I put a curse on the Superman movie. You know, this has ruined my life. DC Comics has ruined my life. And so after that, his cause was championed by comics creators, and also mainstream media started to pick up the story. And so DC Comics got shamed into giving him some money. So at that time, they got Siegel and Shuster, and they gave them $20,000 a year for life to also to renounce the rights, apparently.
Mm.
For both or just...
Each one got $20,000
a year. And yeah. What years are we talking to? The
so that was 1975, now? I think, 1976, around
there.
Not a
king's ransom, but probably, no. I'd say probably close to 50 grand a year, maybe.
Yeah, maybe something like that. And apparently it went up after a while. So towards the end of their life, I think they both died in the mid 90s or later, they were getting around $80,000 a year.
So does that still continue now for the estate of these families?
Well, the thing is, when Shuster died, he was the one who was going blind. He was the artist. I believe what I read was when he died, he was so in debt that his family could not pay his debts. And DC agreed to step in and pay his debts if he would renounce and his family would renounce all rights in the future. Hmm. Siegel, the writer, did not do that. And so he's long since passed away. But his heirs, I believe his wife and his children, sued DC to try to reclaim the rights to Superman. This was starting in the late 90s. It's been going on for years and years and years. They lost, but then it gets appealed. I believe the only thing they won on was the character of Superboy, which apparently they had created outside of Superman. So they now, I think the family now owns the rights to Superboy, but they don't own the rights to
which
Superman.
Which is like a buried character.
Which is crazy.
We never see a Superboy.
You never see it, no.
Any comic book character with the word boy in it
yes.
does not do very well.
No, exactly. And it's totally derivative of the main character. I mean, I don't know how Superboy is different from Superman, but so they apparently control the rights to that.
Hmm.
So DC had to pay them off to use the character of Superboy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
How about the creator of Batman?
Oh, that's a good one. That's another good one. So that's another interesting one because if you ask anyone who created Batman, they would say this guy, Bob Kane.
Bob Kane, yeah.
Yeah, so he...
Bob Kane was like the Steve Ditko of Batman art. He drew that early 40s, 50s Batman.
Yes, yes, exactly right. And he was also had a little bit of Stan Lee in him because he was a total just publicity hound. He did interviews. He loved to put his public face out there. He wrote a bunch of books. He wrote an autobiography, but... He was a better promotional man than he was an artist. Apparently, his art was terrible. And so he actually ran a studio where he hired a bunch of artists on the side. They called them ghosts to draw the Batman
comic.
Wow. But the guy he really screwed over was this guy named Bill Finger, who was... Most people don't know who he is at all.
Finger?
Finger, like, yeah.
Yeah, like our finger.
Okay. Like our finger, exactly. Like he got fingered. so... When Superman took off, Bob Kane was doing some work in the comics industry, and DC said to him, like, hey, we've got this superhero character. Why don't you go and create another superhero character? They're really selling. So Bob Kane apparently went home, and he created this character called Batman. But the Batman character that he created was nothing like the character we knew. It was a guy. He had red tights on. He had a mask on. He carried a gun. And so at the time, Bob Kane was working with this guy, Bill Finger, and he showed the character to Bill Finger, and Bill Finger had a lot of suggestions. And most of his suggestions are what we know about Batman today. Make him a detective, you know, make his character all black so he kind of blends into the shadows. Bill Finger created the Batcave. He created the Batmobile. He created Batman's origin, which is, you know, his parents were shot in an alley.
Right,
and
So Bill Finger created all that?
Created all that.
Wow.
The only reason apparently that Bob Kane gets all the credit that he does is, you know, this is maybe an urban legend, like you just did a show on urban legends, sort of fits in with that. But his father apparently was an accountant. This is what, or knew a lot about money. And so he was able to negotiate a contract with DC to protect his rights. And so one of the clauses in his contract was Bob Kane would always be known as the creator of Batman in perpetuity.
Gotcha.
So he basically screwed over Bill Finger, even though Bill Finger contributed so much to what we know as Batman. Basically, everything we know is Batman.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if you're a Kiss fan or not, but there's a song called War Machine.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when Kiss was... It was 1982. They're trying to get back on track. They had a couple stinker albums. And so they used Bryan Adams and Jim... Valance, and Bryan Adams is the Bryan Adams, the one that we know, Summer 69,
oh, yeah.
Something. And they wrote this song, War Machine, which Gene Simmons loved. And what I heard is that Gene called Bryan Adams and Jim Valance, whatever, and said, this is a great song, but it needs an extra verse. And they're like, well, no, it doesn't. He's, yes, it does. Because that way, instead of being War Machine by Bryan Adams and Jim Valance, it could be War Machine by Gene Simmons, Bryan Adams and Gene Valance. Even though the song did not need another verse, Gene added the verse just so he'd get a little bit of a writing credit. Similar to what we're hearing here.
Yeah. But did you ever have any situations like that in your life? Because you know how the creative process is that...
Yeah, I mean, I've always been very... I mean, there's a lot of times when... I remember back in WCW, Ted Turner's company that I worked for, I came up with this whole idea that there was, at the time, there was a Raven's flock, and Raven was the leader, and he had like a bunch of minions. Mm-hmm. And my idea was I would come in and try and, you know, whatever, get an angle with Raven, or get a match with Raven, and I would have to work my way through the flock.
Oh, cool.
Beat like six guys to finally get to Raven, and then he would beat me. And I pitched that angle.
Right.
And we never did it, but I think it was Chris Benoit or Billy Kidd. No, Billy Kidd was in the flock. I think it was Chris Benoit that actually got the angle. I was like, and then when it happened, I was like, I wrote that.
Right.
But somebody else took it and went, here's a great idea. And you got left out of the loop. And ever since then, whenever I had an idea, I would pitch it right to the boss face to face so he would know it came from me. But it doesn't surprise me that you hear this because perception is reality. And I didn't know until this moment that Bob Kane didn't create Batman.
Right.
I always thought that he did.
Right. Yeah. I think most people don't know until now. Bill Finger, he died also alone and completely destitute, also in Midtown Manhattan.
Wow.
It's one of those sad stories where he died, I think, at age 59, and his body wasn't found for 2 or 3 days because, no one was checking on him. But apparently he did have children, and now I think his son is dead, but he has a grandchild. And the grandchild, with the help of some people, did try to approach DC to get him credit, and I think there was some sort of legal action. But now... on Batman versus Superman movie, he got credited on that as...
characters created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger?
Yeah, I think it's with Bill Finger. Okay. I think because they can't break that contract. But yeah, exactly.
Like at least it's something, right?
Yeah, yeah. And just last, I think December, he got a street name for him up in the Bronx, near where he grew up or where he went to school and where he met Bob Kane, and near a park where he and Bob Kane used to sit, apparently, and hash out the whole Batman stories. So he's getting his due. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I'm sure his heirs get some money as well. So it's, as you said earlier, it's like they're retroactively fixing these mistakes. But it's kind of sad that, we enjoy these movies and there's so much merchandise and so much money in the world that these characters are making. And most people don't know that a lot of the people who created them kind of got screwed over.
Well, that's what I'm saying, too. Like, if you're talking about just the DC universe, and we're going to switch back over to Marvel in a second, or even with Steve Ditko. I mean, like, Batman and Superman still, to me, with all the characters that are going on, and I know there's huge movies and lots of money being made right now with Marvel and not a lot with DC, I still think if you took, a picture, a book of 10 superhero pictures to, Swahili.
Yeah.
Or Russia. Yeah. Or Luxembourg or Winnipeg, Canada, New York City, whatever. People would go, that's Superman, that's Batman, and that's Spider-Man. I still think those... Is there a top three?
I think you're exactly right. I think those are probably the top three.
Maybe the Hulk?
Maybe.
But if I'm just showing you pictures, you go, okay, the guy with the red cape?
Yeah.
Superman. Guy with the spider mask and the guy with the bat mask. We know those guys. And two out of those three are DC. And the fact that they haven't been able to parlay that into more of a DC domination in the movies, to me, just shows how they've blown it. Because everything now is Marvel, 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 Marvel. I mean, this week it's like Ant-Man versus Wasp Girl.
Yeah.
I mean, how low in the totem pole are they getting here?
And yet that movie is a hit, and people are looking forward to it. Yeah, Marvel has done something I think has probably never been done in the history of Hollywood, and that is I think Avengers Infinity War is the 19th movie, since Iron Man came out in 2008. And they have been able to build interest with each successive movie. Whereas, when we were growing up, by the time the third movie came out, it was terrible. You lost interest, like Superman 3.
Well, sure.
it's like that was the rule.
Superman 4, The War for Peace, or whatever.
Remember that one? Peace. I was on cable the other day. I was watching that.
Oh, it's not good. It's not good.
Nuclear Man.
And 3 is tolerable, but that's still Richard Pryor's in it. Like, what?
It's got a computer subplot.
Yeah. You put this hand here and this hand here to open the door. But I remember when, I think we mentioned this last time, speaking with Kevin Smith, I think he's the one who told me that, Marvel signed a deal. Sony signed a deal with Marvel that we have to put out two or three pictures a year, whichever one it was. Mm. And that's why they're digging deep. And they're smart because Ant-Man, okay, who? Paul Rudd. People love Paul Rudd. Put him in there. You know, Avengers Infinity War, ensemble cast. Josh Brolin, we love him, you know, and all these guys. And, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, no one even knows who these people are, but they put a great soundtrack. They put Chris Pratt. Batista's great in it, my brother. So everything Marvel's doing right, DC is doing wrong.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, are you looking forward to Aquaman or...
Well, you know, I always loved Aquaman.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not the guy with the orange shirt and the green tights. It's Jason Momoa, right?
Yeah.
But my thing is like, so what does DC do to try... And actually, let's rephrase this. That's something that you kind of brought up, and I'm going to ask you this, although you can probably explain it better than I can. Where do we go with these movies now in the next 5-10 years? Because listen, it's a huge booming business, but there's only so much you can do with these characters.
Yeah.
Correct?
I agree with you completely. And, you know, I would have thought that audiences would have tired of these a few years ago. Because like you said, there's two or three, and that's just Marvel per year, not to mention the independent ones and the DC ones. And I would have thought audiences would have fled by now, but they haven't.
And why haven't they? I'm assuming you mean from the Marvel side of things.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right, on the Marvel side. Oh, I'd say Marvel has done... They've done two things, I think, and one is they're telling one grand story, and that grand story builds with every film,
right?
And culminated now with Infinity War, and will, I guess, culminate next year's the sequel to Infinity War.
Which, by the way, the end of Infinity War was amazing.
Was amazing, right?
Just as they're like fading away, they send the last text or whatever to Samuel Jackson, who is Nick Cage?
Nick Fury. Nick Cage. Should have been Nick Cage.
It'd be great if he was Nick Cage. Yeah. I don't know what's going on right here, mother. So Nick Fury, like Samuel Jackson, can save the universe.
Exactly.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. So to me, I think that, like, okay, they've done a great job of this, because they always, like, now the tradition is you wait until the credits roll to see the last little tidbit. But there's, I mean, we love Iron Man.
I do.
Do we need another movie? We love, I mean, you tell me, like,
I don't know. And that's what's going to be interesting to see from Marvel, is a lot of the people who started the Marvel Universe, you know, 10 years ago, their contracts are up. So they're they're definitely going to leave. So Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, you know, the original cast. So it's going to be interesting to see.
They signed 10-year contracts.
Well, they signed, at this point, I think Robert Downey Jr. is going per movie. And he said that, you know, it's time to go. And the same with Chris Evans. And so.
Well, have I told you my one theory, though?
What is it?
I don't like it when, if you play one superhero,
you're
banned from playing the next. I think that was on our show.
You have such a weird line in the sand.
I don't like it. Chris Evans. I'm thinking, is he the Human Torch or the Captain America?
That's right. So
What did he sign the rights for? What did he sign the deal for?
But you don't like him as Captain America only because of he's in the
disqualified.
Fantastic Four? All right. So you're
Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. He was Green Lantern. Don't try and fool me. I remember.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck, that you played Daredevil, and the movie sucked, so you're not allowed to be Batman. People got so mad at that read. Mad at my logic, yeah.
I can understand.
Really mad. Josh Brolin is Thanos, but he was something else, too.
Yeah, Cable.
So anyways, sorry. So you're saying these guys' contracts are coming up.
Yeah, so they're out. So it's going to be interesting to see what will happen after that. So, you know, the Marvel has established these new heroes, which are popular. Black Panther, and I guess Ms. Marvel is probably going to be popular, and maybe Ant-Man can go along. Guardians of the Galaxy has another movie coming. But what's going to happen when they no longer have the marquee stars? I mean, would you stand if they recast the role of Iron Man? Would you go see an Iron Man movie that did not star Robert Downey Jr.?
I was never a fan of Iron Man per se. Like I told you the last show we did, I was always a DC guy.
Right.
You know, and I loved Marvel to an extent, but I did not like Iron Man. I didn't like the way he was drawn. I didn't like the concept of Iron Man. I wasn't a fan of Avengers or X-Men. I like Spider-Man, but so to me, like, I have a real big issue with superhero movies. I don't really care for them because I find them all the same. And I'll tell you what it is for me. I think we might have discussed this last time, but now that we're talking about the movies, you know, smarmy hero, sarcastic, funny guy, alien invasion, saves the Earth, end of story.
Mm-hmm.
Or group of smarmy, sarcastic people save the Earth from alien invasion reboot. And I actually, like, when Suicide Squad came out, I really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a great movie, and a lot of people hated it.
Mm-hmm.
I love Will Smith in the movie. I love Margot Robbie in that movie, and the other characters, Jared Leto as Joker. But, you know, like, to me, like, I've always been a DC guy. Like, if you're going about wrestling in the 80s, I was always a WWF guy. I didn't really care about NWA / WCW. So I'm more on that side, so I'm easier sold on the movies they're putting out. You know what I mean?
But why? What appeals to you about DC that Marvel doesn't have?
I think because it's Batman, based around Batman and Superman, you know? Mm. And, you know, Teen Titans. I was a big Teen Titans fan, which I think we talked about last time.
Got a movie coming out, an animated movie at the end of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
Great. With Changeling or Beast Boy?
I don't know what they call him.
Because I don't like, you know, I told you, I don't like the boy involved. Changeling is much better.
Yeah. Maybe he's Beast Man now, you know? He's
just... But my point is, so where do the movies go, though, Reed? Is there other characters that you think in the Marvel universe or DC universe that they can make a cool movie with? Like you mentioned Aquaman.
Yeah.
Does that have a chance to be good?
I don't think so, based on, because it's cut from the same cloth as Batman versus Superman and some of the other misfires. You know, it's the same tone, it's the same visual look, it's the same style. It's that Zack Snyder style that I personally don't like, and based on the reviews, you know, the mainstream public does not like as well. So for me, that one's kind of DOA. And also, I know we were talking about this last time, Aquaman's a little bit goofy to begin with, so I don't know if the...
Yeah, his superpowers are that he controls the ocean.
Yeah, he talks to fish.
And my thing is, okay, so let's say you're on a boat and it sinks.
Yeah.
Batman can't help you.
No. All right.
Superman can.
Well,
Green Lantern can.
You just make sure you don't have any fights on the ocean, I guess.
Have we seen Aquaman yet? Did he appear in Justice League?
He did. Yeah. Yeah.
Did we like him? Was it good? Was it bad?
I mean, some people liked him. You know, he's kind of a badass. You know, I think they tried to play against the type of that Aquaman was kind of a punchline, and they just made him a complete badass. I mean, Jason Momoa is.
Yeah, and he looks crazy. That's a good casting.
Yeah, you know, and he's got the crazy tattoos, and he's like totally ripped, and yeah.
That's one thing I'm glad they did, because, you know, if they would have done, like, you know, the dyed yellow hair and all that other stuff,
right?
You know, I think. If you're good, it all stems back to Entourage when was the name Vinny?
Yeah, Vinny, right? Vincent Chase.
Mm-hmm. When he got the gig with Aquaman with James Cameron, it was a big deal.
Right.
And it's cool they finally did it, but you had to completely recreate the mold.
Exactly. And in Entourage, that was played as kind of satire, like superhero movie. There's no way they're ever going to get to Aquaman.
Right.
And then now they're actually getting to Aquaman, which to me.
So what other DC characters do you think they could do something with?
Well, I mean, they're making a sequel to Wonder Woman, which comes out next year.
Well, but that was a legit hit, though.
That was a legit hit. Right. So I feel like that's the way they need to go. They just need to have their own vision for characters that do not conform with what has gone before, because the universe that they've tried to create with the Zack Snyder movies, the Batman versus Superman, the Justice League, I think is a complete misfire. I don't think people want any more of that. And so they need to just come up with a new vision that fits that whatever particular character they want, and not try to shoehorn it into this universe that they're building, as mm-hmm. Marvel has done mm-hmm. so well. So, I mean, I would like to see that. I'd like to see a new Superman movie. They're making a new Batman movie, apparently.
Really? With who?
Well, this is the rumor that Ben Affleck is out.
But people didn't like Ben Affleck as Batman.
I didn't.
Right.
Did you?
To me, it's always still Michael Keaton.
Yeah, okay.
Which was very controversial when he was cast.
Right.
Because he's a comedian, Mr. Mom. Mm-hmm. But he played it like, you know, I loved him as the everyman rich guy who had that little crazy psycho. We talked about this last time about Christopher Reeve as Superman.
Right.
Something looks off about these guys. And Michael Keaton, as we saw in Birdman, like, he looks a little bit crazy. Whereas Clooney didn't have that. Val Kilmer kind of did, but they didn't give enough. You know, Christian Bale was great to me.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Affleck doesn't look crazy to me. No. Like, if someone said Ben Affleck called you a jerk, I'd go punch him in the face. If someone said Christian Bale called you a jerk, I'd say, well, you know, I'm a jerk. See you later, buddy. Like, you know what I mean? There's something different there, a little bit off.
It's funny that you picked that up, because that was Tim Burton's big fight with the studio. He wanted to cast Michael Keaton, and the studio was completely dead set against it because no one thinks of him first as Batman.
Right.
But Tim Burton's argument was, I'm not casting Batman, I'm casting Bruce Wayne, which I think is, you picked up on it, it's the total genius move that he did.
And why did he choose Michael Keaton of all people?
Well, yeah, he'd work with him in Beetlejuice, and he thought he displayed exactly what you're talking about. He's a great Bruce Wayne,
yeah.
And he has that little bit of kind of psychosis, but he can also play the debonair rich guy. And so I think it worked. I agree with you. I didn't need him. I didn't need some like big muscle bound kind of guy to be Batman, to be believable. I believe Michael Keaton.
Because the idea with Bruce Wayne is that he's basically an everyman who's a rich playboy, but also very smart.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have superpowers.
Right.
He's just very smart and very physically agile and fit. So to me, the more of a muscle-bound guy you get, the less that fits with the basic canon of Batman is,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
Batman is a guy who, like you said, his parents were shot in front of him in a back alley after a movie, and then grows up wanting to be a crime fighter. So let's say it's you or me. We might not be blessed with genetics of a 6'5", you know, 280-pound guy. You might just be a normal-looking guy, which Bruce Wayne is.
Right.
Right?
Exactly. And so also, what makes you... Something in his head is broken. You know, his parents get shot in front of him. So what makes you so broken that you decide you're going to put on a bat costume and go out and fight crime? You know, none of us would do that if our parents got shot. So I do think it was good casting. And I think,
so who are they talking about now?
I don't know. I haven't seen any names.
Affleck is out. So, okay.
Maybe. I mean, that's the rumor.
Because the thing with Batman, too, is there's a lot of great villains
mm-hmm.
in the Batman realm. And you have to go deep. Like, they did it with Mr. Freeze before with Schwarzenegger, mm-hmm. which was kind of campy, and I think they did Poison Ivy and Jim Carrey's The Riddler.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember like Blockbuster. Remember Blockbuster?
No.
Okay, so Blockbuster, Google it, kids, was like just a total musclehead lunatic, kind of like Bane, but Bane was like, was he a nuclear problem or?
He got injected with some sort of
so many steroids
serum,
or whatever.
Yeah.
And Blockbuster was just a big giant dude that just would crush people. I always liked that villain. He was very, very, very C-lister, you know? But I think there's a lot of those type of villains. Just like Superman. Like they should do a Mr. Mixtleplick. Remember Mr. Mixtleplick?
Yeah.
Explain who that is.
Yeah, so he was a little impish guy, right? He was from another dimension.
Yes.
He looked almost like the Lucky Charms leprechaun.
Yes.
And he tormented Superman, and the way to beat him was always to make him say his name backwards.
Right, if you could say his name backwards.
Which... You know, he was a big part of I think it was the Super Friends cartoon. I don't know if you ever watched that.
I did.
Do they have that in Canada?
Oh, yes, they did.
Okay, all right.
And the Spider-Man cartoon.
Okay. So, you know, but it was, as a kid, I always loved it. But, you know, can you imagine as an adult sitting down and trying to write, like, the 30th episode of Mr. Mixleplick and coming up with yet another way where we've tricked him into saying his name backwards?
Yeah, I couldn't imagine.
Thus,
he would disappear, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they need something, though, man. Because, like you said, like, Superman versus Batman is as big as it gets.
Yeah.
And it didn't work.
It didn't.
Right?
No, but I think they're just going to come up with a new vision of Batman. So they've got Matt Reeves, the guy who did the War of the Planet of the Apes, working on the new Batman. So I think maybe that's a good choice.
And Justice League of America, did that do any business?
It did some, but I mean, it was considered a disappointment, so much so that I think Warner Brothers is now, they've basically fired the whole team behind it. They've replaced their management. So I think they're completely.
Does it seem like DC has to go a little bit deeper? Like we're talking about Ant-Man, just such a random, small little character. Like, could they do like a Plastic Man movie or.
Maybe. I mean, I think if they did it right, people would watch it. But it was like the reason you like the DC characters is because they're so kind of iconic. And so I would think they would get these characters right first. I mean, it's how do you screw up a Batman movie? I don't know how they do it. I mean, they should just put out a Batman movie every 2 or 3 years. How do you screw up a Superman movie? Yeah.
But they have. I find by the casting.
Yeah.
I've never seen a Superman that I've liked better than Christopher Reeve.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 40 years ago, literally.
That's right.
78, right?
That's right.
And I think they've missed the mark.
Yeah.
I really do. Whereas the Batmans, they've had some good ones, but like you can't build your empire just on those two alone.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Maybe they should go a little bit deeper.
Green Arrow, could that help?
I mean, the TV show does great,
right?
Which I never thought would have happened. So I don't know how they made that character.
Flash?
The Flash?
Flash could be a good one.
I
know there's a CW Flash, but
yeah.
A movie version of Flash, maybe?
They're developing
JLA?
It. He was, and they had planned a movie for this year or next, but that got scrapped after the whole Justice League debacle. Apparently, it was a very serious script, and now they're redeveloping it, kind of what I read was in the mold of Back to the Future. So,
meaning
the Flash can run so fast that he can travel in time.
Okay, well, he's done that. He's seen that before.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's canon. So I think they're looking to do something a little bit lighter with him that involves time traveling.
What else are you hearing as far as upcoming movies?
I mean, there's a few things. The Wonder Woman movie is set in the 80s, which I'm kind of excited about, just to see the haircuts and the fashion.
Everyone loves movies in the 80s now.
Definitely, yeah, man. Yeah. But it's funny. Like, I grew up in the 80s.
So did
like,
I.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining.
I know.
That's why I love Glow on Netflix.
Oh,
it's so
yeah,
great.
Yeah, that's right. So you like to watch things from the 80s.
I do, because, when you grew up in that era, it was such a fun era. Mm-hmm. And so over the top, campy in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So I can see that working with Wonder Woman. That's like I said, like for me, the lone bright spot, in the last year and a half, 18 months, which is the same thing, of DC movies was Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was like, okay, they finally nailed this character.
Right.
And the tone of this movie, and they could probably build a franchise on that.
Yeah, maybe so. I think they are. And I think, unless they screw up this movie completely, that they'll have Wonder Woman going forward,
try to
do some good things with that, and they just need to rethink their other characters. Maybe the Batman movie will be a hit, and that'll establish Batman, and then maybe down the line they'll bring the likable versions of these characters back together in another Justice League.
It's all like in the casting, right? Like, you are looking at Batman, or I'm looking at Batman, like James Bond.
Yeah.
And everyone loves Sean Connery. And Roger Moore, for a time capsule guy, was great. Timothy Dalton, not good.
Mm-hmm.
George Lazenby, not good.
Mm-hmm.
Pierce Brosnan, okay. And now Daniel Craig. Now that's a guy I believe in again.
He's great.
So that's kind of what they need to do with Batman, bring somebody else in there. Because I thought Christian Bale was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But he just didn't want to do it anymore, right?
He didn't. I guess, he's just wanted to move on to other things, and Christopher Nolan was moving on, so he probably didn't want to work with a different director. But I agree with you. I think those characters are forever. Like,
right.
James Bond movie comes out, I still get excited about that, and they find ways to just tell a new one-off story each time.
That's what comic books are, right?
Yeah.
Every month, the new book comes in, it's got to be a different story with the same character.
So I agree with you. I think DC got a little too hung up on trying to copy Marvel, which was create a universe where each movie flows into the next, and you're telling one larger story that culminates in one of the big movies, just in this case, Justice League of America. So maybe you're right. Maybe they should just step back and just take their characters and just do different versions of them kind of forever. Why do they have to copy Marvel all the time?
Right. So what else do we have coming up comic book wise? I mean, obviously, I'm still thinking Walking Dead, maybe the most successful comic at this point,
mm-hmm.
as far as adapting to this iconic series that we have,
mm-hmm.
but the comics are still rolling.
The Walking Dead comic?
Yes.
It's a great comic.
Right.
If people who just watch the show don't read the comic, it's truly
But they haven't reached the end of the comic on the show yet. There's still a lot of other things. Like, I can't remember what the name of them are. Is it the White Walkers? That's Game of Thrones. But there's some kind of group that is in the middle of a bunch of a pack of walkers,
yes.
because they wear the entrails.
The Whisperers?
The Whisperers,
yeah,
that's it.
Right, okay.
So for people that don't know, and this is not a spoiler because I don't read the comics, but we have not seen the Whisperers yet,
mm-hmm.
which is a group of psychos, just like, Negan's gang,
mm-hmm.
but they travel in a pack of zombies.
It's great.
Camouflaged by the zombie entrails.
It's great. Yeah.
Wow.
That comic is so imaginative, and it does such a good job of really thinking about what the world would be like if everything broke down. And
right.
I think it's almost up to issue 200 now, and it still never gets old.
So it still comes out every month.
Still comes out every month. The trade paperbacks sell a ton. Yeah. I really, if people will just watch the TV show, and they're missing out on the comic because it's really
because like
great.
Game of Thrones has gone past the book.
Yeah.
So now the dude is like okay, like stop watching the show. I'm read the book.
What's up with that guy? It's taking him like every time I see him, he's signed on to some other project.
He's damn creative,
Yeah.
But I like the fact that Walking Dead is ahead of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it also doesn't do the same thing as the show doesn't do the same thing as the comic and vice versa.
Yeah, I like that
so
too.
So you can enjoy them both.
Right. I think they were trying to do that intentionally.
Right.
So you wouldn't, if you read the comic, you wouldn't be sitting there bored with the show. But
right.
There's a few movies coming out next year. What about Shazam? Do you know this character Shazam?
Well, of course I know the character of Shazam. Now, DC. Let's explain what Shazam is. Okay. Billy Batson.
Correct.
Yeah.
So Billy Batson, Shazam, actually he's called Captain Marvel. He came out
in the 40s. He had two names. Why?
That's another interesting one.
Lay it on us, dude.
Yeah, okay. So he's been sued to oblivion. So he came out after Superman came out to try to ride the coattails of Superman. He was published by another comics company. He was called Captain Marvel at the time. DC did not like it and sued that comics company and won, and he had to cease publication Captain Marvel in the 50s. But he was very popular. I mean, he was selling supposedly the most sold comic of that time period was a Captain Marvel. He was selling millions at the time, almost as much as Superman, and sometimes
with
more.
With a different company, though, like you
said. A different company, yeah, Fawcett.
Fawcett?
Yeah. And so in the 1970s, weirdly enough, DC acquired the rights to publish Captain Marvel, even though they had sued him out of business. And so they brought him back, I think, in 1972, and only to find that they could not call him Captain Marvel because Marvel Comics, a few years earlier, had trademarked the name or copyrighted the name Captain Marvel. And so DC had paid all this money to acquire this character only to find out that they had been screwed over by Marvel, which is pretty awesome. So they had to call him Shazam, which is his magic word. So he's a character. He's basically a guy who says the magic word Shazam and through some sort of wizardry turns into this Superman-like character.
Right,
he can
exactly,
fly.
Yeah.
He's invulnerable. His cape's just a little bit shorter. That's really the only difference.
And Billy Batson is kind of like a Peter Parker. Like, he's kind of a nerdy kid.
Yeah, exactly.
And whenever he gets in trouble, he yells out, Shazam!
Yeah, and like Superman, he has this whole family of Shazam characters.
A dog.
Mary Marvel. There's a grandpa Shazam. There's like a whole family. It sort of got ridiculous after a while. So even to this day, DC publishes Shazam, and they cannot call him Captain Marvel because Marvel owns the trademark to Captain Marvel.
So they're getting ready to do a movie for Shazam?
So they're getting ready to do a movie, and it is called Shazam. So
was The Rock attached to this or something at some point?
He was. He's going to play the villain, supposedly.
Black Shazam?
Black Adam.
Oh, Black Adam. Sorry.
Yeah.
I knew there was a Black
Shazam
in there.
Would be amazing, though. Probably.
Black Adam.
Yeah. So he's supposedly the villain, but I don't know if he's going to appear in this one, but they were talking about making his own movie. Giving him because he's The Rock, so they would give him his own movie.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to
see. Do we know who's playing Shazam?
Yes, and I can't remember his name right now. He was,
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, if only.
Dumbest name ever.
Yeah. he was in an NBC sitcom where he's kind of a quirky, funny guy. Apparently it's a comedy, Shazam. They put out a poster.
Isn't that what they want now, though? Because all, like, the Guardians of the Galaxy was so, like, funny that everyone loved the humor of it.
Exactly.
It's funny because I just typed in Shazam as soon as I play Shazam, but it comes up with the app will tell you what music that you want to hear.
You how low this character has got. It's
exactly.
Below an app on Google.
Shazam film.
Yeah.
2019.
Yeah.
Oh, it's got a cool logo.
Yeah.
There's the logo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it looks like kind of an AC/DC type thing. And it says, starring Zachary Levi.
Thank you. Yes, Zachary Levi.
It does not have The Rock in here, though.
He was in Chuck. I think it was that NBC.
Zachary
series.
Levi, he played Chuck Bartowski in the series Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I know that show.
It was on, I think, NBC for a few seasons.
Was it a comedy? Or?
He kind of, like a dramedy.
All right. He was in Thor and Thor Ragnarok.
Okay.
So he must have been a villain in those things. So that's kind of the new one that they're looking for.
Yeah.
Is Shazam.
So that, I mean, but it was going to be interesting to see what happens with that because, you know, that doesn't, I don't know if they're going to try to fit it into the DC universe where Batman and Superman live or if it's just going to be its own complete thing.
They seemed, it's getting really deep here because I'm not going to read it. Upcoming American superhero film, a DC Comics character of the same name is intended to be the seventh installment in the DC Extended Universe.
Yeah, okay.
Is that what we're talking about?
That's what we're talking about. Okay. But I call a little bit bullcrap on that in the same way that, you know, Wonder Woman didn't feel like it necessarily fit into those other films.
So you're saying that just because Wonder Woman's there, she's not exactly like, you know, doesn't have Batman's phone number in her, you know, cell phone,
right.
In her Wonder phone.
Maybe she does.
Maybe she does. Let me ask you, as we wind down here, another comic. This is not DC or Marvel. It's got a huge follower, and that was Riverdale.
Yeah, yeah.
Based on Archie comics.
Yeah.
And years ago, 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, I had actually talked to Archie Comics about writing a book. What? And then I just ran out of time, and the ideas that I had just weren't coming together. But I turned my kids onto the comics, and now my daughters are obsessed. One of them in particular, Sierra, is obsessed with the show Riverdale.
Okay.
You know, Jughead and all that. And, yeah. And it's not like, it's not a lighthearted comedy. It's a deep drama with murder. Mm-hmm. Like Midge, Moose's girlfriend, got murdered. Like Veronica's dad is a murderer. And it's all these crazy things. And they're just, they're so into it that they thought that Jughead died in the second last episode. And my daughter was bawling and crying. Really? So much tears. Jughead's not dead. Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, it was like, wow, it's interesting to me when you see, like you mentioned Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned The Flash and CW, and Riverdale, I think, is also CW. Mm-hmm. Luke Cage on Netflix. They're finding these kind of more random characters to make TV series out of, and they're very popular, which really blows me away.
That's interesting. What is your daughter like about the show in particular?
Well, they cast. It's funny, too, because for us, guys our age, Luke Perry's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Consuelos is in it. Skeet Ulrich is in it. All these guys that we watched in the 90s and 2000s that were leading men, now they play the parents. And of course they love Cole Sprouse is Jughead. He's like, you know, one of the hot young upstarts, and whoever plays Archie, some redheaded dude. But it's very serious, which I was like laughing, because I remember, like, I was a huge Archie comics fan when I was a kid, but it was all more funny.
Yeah,
Jughead ate food, he hated girls.
Yep.
Now it's a whole different vibe, but it's still keeping this comic book tradition alive to a whole new generation.
It's really amazing. Yeah, because that's probably, Archie's what, 70 years old, I think?
I mean, I think he probably started around the time Batman and Superman did.
I think you're exactly right. And they've managed to reinvent him, because I know a few years ago they reinvented the comic. And so
right,
it looks much more photorealistic, is the wrong, but it's not drawn in that cartoony style.
Yes.
And it's written much more like a soap opera with real teenage problems. It's not... You know,
right, it's almost like it's like more like a more evil Degrassi junior high,
right?
Where they've got the teenage problems, but then there's murder,
yeah,
and like Jughead got the shit kicked out of him by this evil gang that came to town. It's just like, man, this is not the Archie comics that I know, but I also feel very proud that my daughters are growing up with Archie the same way that I did.
Yep,
but not by reading the comics.
But have you ever shown them the old comics and be like, this is what Archie actually looks like?
Well, yeah, like I said, like when I was talking about writing a story for them, I took them to the comic book store.
Oh, okay.
And actually, they were sending me boxes of Archie comics that I would give to my kids. Man. I'm not sure how much they got into it, but they were familiar enough with the characters so that when Riverdale became a thing, they jumped right on it.
Oh, gotcha.
And that's, I guess, as the last question or the last topic to discuss is, where do comic books go now in the future? When we were kids, we would go to the comic book shop and buy your titles.
Yep.
I know people still do that, mm-hmm. but they're all adults.
They are.
Right?
And they're all adults who are probably middle-aged, and they have a lot of disposable income, because comics now are $4, $5 just for a single issue.
Right.
Sometimes it's only 20 pages of story. Whereas when I was growing up in the 80s, they were 65 or 75 cents. You could get a big stack of them, take them to the beach or whatever.
I remember in the 70s, you can get them for 25 cents. I had some that were 10 cents.
Really?
I had some that were 8 cents. But that's like 1972, 73,
that's
right?
That's right, yeah. And so I think now they're kind of out of the reach of average everyday kids and their allowance. They become much more of a niche specialty item for the hardcore fans, the hardcore collectors, people who have been reading comics for 20 or 30 years and... you know all the ins and outs of the stories and the continuity going back decades. And so they're not written for new readers, and I don't think they're trying to necessarily attract new readers. They say they are, but I find them impenetrable.
But how does the industry survive then?
Yes, I mean, by just catering to those hardcore, you know, the last estimate I saw was maybe only a couple hundred thousand readers in the United States are actively reading comic books.
Wow.
Which is kind of scary, and it's dwindling. You know, if you look at sales over the decades, they're just dwindling. And so Marvel and DC are much more stunt-driven these days. One of the things they've been doing is they restart the comic book, the titles at issue number one to try to get collectors on board and just try to draw attention. So they keep restarting them. I mean, Wolverine has been restarted like 5 times in the last 6 years, something like that. You know, they're restarting Superman. DC is again. They just so they're doing all of that and to try to squeeze more money out of a dwindling audience.
Well, that's what I mean. And I bet you that demographic is probably in their 30s and 40s.
They are.
Because, you know, my kids aren't going to the comic book store. And that's how I judge everything. Like, same thing with, like, you know, CD sales or book sales, DVD sales. Those physical items don't exist to children that are 15 or 12. Comics, I'm not sure if they release them online.
They do.
They do.
But sales are minuscule.
Of course. So they're more, it's almost like when you're in a band, you release a record almost as a souvenir to your fans who then come to the show.
That's what I've heard from everyone who's in music now.
Right.
It's just that they make their money from the concerts.
From the show.
And the music is like a loss leader. It's like so almost marketing.
It would almost seem that the comics themselves are souvenirs.
Yeah.
For people to go to see them in the movies or watch them on TV.
You could be right on that.
And by
exactly.
The merch. Like, my house is filled with Riverdale merch.
Uh-huh.
I bought in phone cases and stickers and shirts and banners. That is where Riverdale / Archie is probably making way more money off that than they ever did. They ever are off, you know, the titles now.
Could be. And if that's true, then they're really smart to kind of pivot in that way and just move away from the traditional comic book publishing and try to make money in other ways. But yeah,
do you think there's a time, Reed, when the comics that we know won't exist anymore?
Maybe. I don't know. I thought about this a lot, and it could be. It could very much be. But one of the things that has always kept them in business, especially now, is they are, as you say, owned by the movie studios. And what is really happening is they're almost like R&D labs for the movies. So they've got all these great writers who know these characters well. They've got editors who have sometimes been editing these characters for many, many years. And each month they're producing a new story. So all these characters, every single month, producing a new story, and that could be turned into an episode of a TV show or a new film. And so when Marvel goes to do Ant-Man or whatever, they've got literally decades of Ant-Man stories to choose from, and they know what works with the character and what doesn't. And so I think that's a real, real benefit to superhero movies and one of the reasons why they do so well. It's not just somebody sitting down and trying to write what happens to Indiana Jones next. Well, we have no idea. Well, with Ant-Man, they know. Mm-hmm. You know, with the Avengers, they know. And so all these characters have that advantage. So I think in the long run, what does Disney care about losing even a few million dollars? I don't think they lose in publishing, but if the day comes where they are in the red, I don't think they'll care, because what's that to develop these movies?
Right.
So that's, I guess, my hope of what will happen, but I really don't know. I mean, what happens when comic books are so expensive that they're selling 2,000 issues? I really don't, know what's going to happen then.
Or the demand decreases to where there's only 2,000 people in their 50s who still want comics because they grew up that way.
Right.
Because, like I said, my kids love comic book movies or TV shows, but not the comics themselves.
That's so true. And that's what's happening with a lot of the audience, is that millions and millions of people around the world go to see the Ant-Man movie or go to see the Avengers movie, but then for some reason it does not translate into comic sales. And that's been happening since the Superman movie came out in the 70s.
Yeah.
And no one is sure why. But I guess I can understand, because I wouldn't necessarily run out and look for the source material. You know, I didn't go out and read the James Bond novels. I don't know about you. I used to. Did you really?
I did, yeah.
Hey, Ian Fleming. Let me go.
Ian Fleming. Like a movie.
Yeah.
Last question. What's your favorite superhero movie?
Ooh, man. The original Superman. What about you?
Original Superman. I love Superman 2 as well. I also loved Tim Burton's Batman with Jack Nicholson as a Joker. And as great as Heath Ledger was, I still think Jack Nicholson is the best Joker of all time.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
Even with the Prince soundtrack. Have you gone back and watched
Bat
that?
Dance?
Yeah.
It's so 80s, right?
So 80s.
Yeah, man. Dude, what a great stuff. We're going to do this in a few months. We'll do another episode of Comic Talk, although I might change the name of that by the time this comes out. But if not, it's Comic Talk with Reed Tucker / Tucker Reed. Another classic. Slugfest is the book.
Thank you.
Go buy it. It's a great story about Marvel versus DC, and we'll continue this relationship in the future, man.
Thanks for having me on. I had a great time, as
Cheers,
always.
Man. Thank you. Excelsior!
Thanks again to Reed Tucker. What a great guy. Pick up his book about the Marvel versus DC war called Slugfest, inside the epic 50-year battle between Marvel and DC. You can get that on Amazon or wherever you buy books. Go back and listen to the show we did earlier this year. It was a great time. Great time today learning about all those guys that got ripped off that created these amazing characters and these amazing universes. So God bless all those guys. Thanks for all the great years and all the great superheroes that all you guys created. Thanks for listening today. And coming up next week, next Wednesday, we're digging into the Stephen Avery and Brendan Dassey case that's featured on the Netflix docuseries Making a Murder, both seasons. I just finished watching season two with expert journalist John Farrick. Now, John's been covering this case since the trial back in 2005, whenever it was, which was the focus of the first season of Making a Murder. And John's continuing to cover the developments in the case since that time, and even wrote a book about it himself. It's called Wrecking Crew. He tells us why he thinks Stephen and Brendan are innocent, what he believes really happened to Teresa Halbach and what may have actually killed her, who may have actually killed her. John breaks down the evidence and shares some theories on why he believes Manitowoc County and the state of Wisconsin are so determined to keep both Stephen and Brendan in prison. He's going to talk about Kathleen Zellner and the methods she's using to prove that Avery and Dassey are innocent, if you believe that. All of the inside information. He also updates us on the latest developments in the case that have happened since the second season of Making Murder was released. If you're into Making the Murder as much as I am, one of the strangest, most controversial Netflix shows, you're going to want to listen to this. If you haven't seen Making a Murder yet, go check it out and join us on Wednesday for a great conversation about Making a Murderer with John Farrick. Okay, we'll see you then. Be safe. Peace, love, and hugs. And like I said, you know I love you. Stay hungry, stay hard, and we'll see you on next week, and give you a big yeah, boy, for 2019.